Couple of quick plugs before we start today's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is @NarbosPodcast. If you want to email us, our email address is narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments on future episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. And if you want to be on a future episode, let us know as well, and we'll try to set something up. You can also follow our show on all of the podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So please give us a follow and subscribe on any of those sites, and you will be able to get us pushed to you every single week. The theme music for this show is brought to you by a band called Ew, You're a Girl and Girls Suck. They are a punk band from here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And their Bandcamp page is iagags.bandcamp.com. That's iagags.bandcamp.com. They used to watch Degrassi episodes when they took breaks from recording back in the 90s. Anyways, that's about it for the plugs. Let's get to this week's episode.
It's the Narbos and Broomheads podcast, your favorite Degrassi Universe podcast. And tonight we're going to talk about the Kids of Degrassi Street, Episode 7, Casey Draws the Line. Now, if you thought maybe this episode was about Casey trying to stop a bully, or telling a lie, or being asked to cheat, I'd say those are great guesses, and ones that fit not just within the title, but the Degrassi world itself. But no, this episode's title is about Casey and her family legitimately drawing a line with a little animal murder as a chaser.
Spoiler alert.
Here that is ready to walk this line with me tonight. And who was that little giggle I heard? Maybe it came from Toronto?
I'm going to have to draw the property line between Toronto and Oakville. And don't cross it, bitch.
Different now.
Yeah, this is my city. Hi, everybody. It's Alan, and I'm in Toronto. And I think Ted's going to come on next. But Ted, before I came on to the podcast, I was like, my wife Sarah asked me, who's on tonight? And I told her, and she said, I have a request. And I was like, gee, tell me what it is. More Linda pictures, please, on Instagram.
Linda!
Thank you, Sarah.
She was also wondering, what do you think Linda is doing right now, is what I was asked.
So, Linda's currently chewing a bone that I gave her. Which she's already chewed up, but you put it away for a while and give it back to her. She's like, bone, awesome. What's old is new again. So she's chowing down on that right now. My name is Ted, owner of Linda, and I am here. I am back. Hello.
Welcome What's back. Up?
Now all the important things are out of the way. You all know what Linda's doing, chewing on said bone. Let's throw it over to another dog owner owned by a dog. The Tanook's owner. Who could that be?
Yeah, Tanooki, the best dog in Regina.
Mm-hmm.
Officially. Hey, everyone. It's Arlo coming to you from Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. Ted, do you ever get Linda those Himalayan yak cheese chews?
No,
do you
I
know
do
what
not.
I'm talking about?
I know all those words separately. Together, no idea.
Okay. They're really cool. I'll have to send you one.
Ooh, thank you. And with that, Linda's knocking at the door to go out because, of course, she was looking at her wristwatch. She's like, are you starting the podcast now? Yes? Okay, now I need to pee.
Thanks, Linda.
Yeah. Jerk. I'll be right back. Talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I mean, this is apropos. There is a dog who is pivotal to the plot of this episode. So.
Sure is. Yeah, a murderous dog. I can't wait. I think what a lesson. After I watched this, I described it to my wife and my kid, and who have not seen the episode and don't know what happens. And so you're just kind of moseying along. Here's the issue, blah blah blah. And then it culminates with this, and they were both horrified. Like, what?
Yeah, like it's really cutthroat. It just goes for it and says, you're learning this lesson.
Yeah.
So it's great. So, like, saddle up, kids. Here we go.
Yeah, can't wait.
Not on the topic of animal murder, but...
but on the topic of animal murder. Yes, go ahead.
I teach a couple fitness classes this semester at school, and I usually work out with the classes a little bit. But this semester I said, I'm going to really focus on, like, working out, like, my lower body. Because I bike all summer, so it's pretty... I utilize it in the summer, but over the school year, I don't really like kind of work out my lower body. So I said, my focus this semester, because we set goals with the kids, is I'm going to really focus on working out my lower body. So Thursday was the day that I really said, okay, I'm going to push this workout a little bit, which was fine. Like, I knew I'd push myself a little too far, but that was okay. But then last night, I happened to go in and chaperone our semi-formal. So I stood at the semi-formal for about 5 hours. And then today we had fitness testing with some running stuff, so these 12-minute run things. So I ran them today. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get out of this chair by the time we're done this podcast because my legs are almost
seized up. And then you realize that you're over the age of 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, over the age of 40 now. And my legs might not move after we're sitting here so long. So if you hear me squeaking my chair, it's because I'm constantly moving so I don't get stuck.
R.I.P. in peace, your legs.
End of the road.
Yep.
All right. So back to the episode at hand. So again, we're reviewing episode 7, Casey Draws the Line. It was aired December 27th, 1982. And we'll call this the third episode of the Xmas Break Quadrology of Degrassi. Directed by Linda Shiler and Kit Hood, written by Amy Jo Cooper, Moore and Shiler, and when I was looking up this episode for some other things, did you guys happen to realize they actually wrote a book about this story, kind of like they had the Degrassi books called Casey Draws the Line and Other Stories?
I did notice that as I was doing some research for these episodes.
And you can still buy them. Indigo, you can still buy it.
I'm on Amazon right now, paperback. Then it's got a nice... Yeah. Got a nice picture of Casey and Lisa feeding their nice alive rabbit. So that's nothing could possibly go wrong.
Now, unlike I think the Degrassi ones where they sort of tell an expanded story or whatever, I think these ones are just straight retellings of some of the episodes we'll go through. But I just thought, okay, they did this. I didn't realize they did this as early as Kids of Degrassi Street.
I wonder if there's a scene that they get into more detail of that.
Yeah, like what that garbage bag looked like.
Like that happened off camera on the show, but then, you know, in the book they go into gross detail of
maybe it's a point of view from the rabbit.
Horrifying detail.
There's the epilogue is titled "Dogs Gotta Eat."
It's like, circle of life.
Uh-huh.
If you didn't watch this episode ahead of time, guys, we're not really hiding too much of what happened, so feel free to pause now and go watch the episode.
What did you think was going to happen when you're listening to this episode? Come on.
Uh-huh. It got a rating of 6.9 on IMDb, which is actually one of the lower rated episodes of the whole series. I mean, I like the episode. We'll talk about it. But you can kind of see it might be a little bit weaker than some of the other ones I think we've seen.
By the way, I'm at the on Amazon right now. And like all of the stories from this series are in book format. I'm just cruising through them right now and filling up my cart as we speak.
Nice. I thought it was just that one.
No. Casey Draws the Line is there. Karen Keeps Her Word. Griff Makes a Date. I wonder if all the language from that episode that's upcoming is in that one. I sure hope so. So, yeah.
I can't imagine it wouldn't be from when it was published.
So, yeah, no, I'm loading up right now. Noel buys a suit.
All right. So the episode starts with Casey and Lisa making their way to school. I think this is the first time we see the outside of the school, I think, in the show, and maybe their classroom as well. We learn that Lisa's concerned because she's left her lunch at home, so she says the teacher's going to kill her. We learn the teacher's name is Mrs. Gonzalez a little bit later, but Casey says she'll share. So, you know, just get a sense that these two are really tight friends and they'll look out after each other.
Because the teacher really cares, right? Like, these days the teacher would be like, well, I guess you're starving. Like, why would they be mad? That she forgot her lunch. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, she said she forgot her lunch again.
Yeah, I think it's a problem.
So this is a perpetual problem for.
I think it's setting the tone that back we learn that she's kind of forgetful.
Ah, okay.
right? Because remember in this pact we'll talk about, she doesn't really live up to her end of the pact a few times.
Right. I guess
that's maybe what it is. Girls look very much at the time with their toques and their winter jackets, and we get a sense that winter's probably coming pretty soon to Ontario. So we jump to the classroom. The class is learning about past tense, and they're asked to write about one particular thing that happened to them the past summer. So we're going to get a little time travel.
Well, and Mrs. Gonzalez here is played by one Wendy Watson.
Ah.
Ooh.
Who you may recognize as the wife of Louis Nan, the composer, and she is also a composer in her own right.
Yes, one half of the Dipshit
duo.
She's
on a fair bit in this show. Mm-hmm. So Casey asked to borrow a ruler, and do you guys, like, remember rulers and how, you know, like, we had lots of rules when I was in class about, like, underlining your titles and make sure you use a ruler. I don't think any of my students own rulers anymore.
No, because you don't write things with pens anymore. What are we?
They don't do it very
savages?
Well.
Savages? No.
Everyone's always on their phones.
Yeah. Damn kids.
Yeah.
Always on the my Facebook, you know, whatever, Graham.
Yeah, the kid that was doing presentations in one of my classes today, too, and a kid just right in front of me because I was sitting at the back just on his phone playing his video game. Didn't care.
Yeah. Well, welcome to 2024, teacher.
Yeah, I guess they shouldn't be surprised anymore. So Casey, we get Casey's, I guess, point of view of this story first, and she starts to write about what she titled A Bad Summer. Instead of this being Degrassi, who knows what that summer could entail? Could it be pregnancy? Could it be Sasquatch murders?
Abortions?
Maybe child someone told molestation. Her she stinks.
Yeah.
Sasquatch maybe someone told abortions. Her she stinks.
Going to summer camp and getting knocked up? Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of things in Degrassi happen in the summertime, everybody. I like they use this as it's weird. Like I'll talk about this for the next episode too, but it feels to me like every episode they're like, let's try something completely different for how we're going to approach this episode. So in this one, we're going to have narration throughout, cutting back and forth from present time to a story in the past told by the two kids. So that's the trope for this one.
In the past tense,
yes.
Specifically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're tying it to a school topic they're learning about, which is kind of good, I guess.
Well, I did notice that this one's written by Amy Jo Cooper, and like notably, we saw her write the film noir one.
Okay.
Which also had the narration, sort of the voiceover and whatnot.
So she's the auteur of the writers in this.
Well, so. It made me wonder if maybe this was kind of a trope that this particular writer uses often. But we haven't seen enough from her to really know, I guess. So I did notice that though.
Okay. So we fly back to summer, the previous summer. And who do we start off with? As we should with every episode, the motherfucking man, Noel.
Yes.
Wanting Randall. To give away his rabbit, as he has a sign that says, for free, one very nice rabbit to give a good home, after we learn he had already tried to sell it to no avail.
Yeah, plan A, for sale. No one wants that rabbit. Cross it out, take the fucking rabbit.
Yep. Yeah, please take the rabbit. Casey doesn't understand why, and Noel says that he can't take care of the rabbit anymore. Like, come on, the dude is legitimately running a handyman business. And cooking every night for his family.
Yes, he works full time. He runs the house. He doesn't have time for rabbits.
Fuck no. And fuck rabbits, by the way. I'm going to point that out a few times.
Well.
Rabbits as pets can just fuck off.
Wow.
Now, somebody feels strongly about
it. I was going to say, like, we talk about, like, racism and war and all sorts of stuff on this show. And this is the strongest reaction you've ever had to rabbits as pets. Yeah.
Walking out over there.
I just think they're useless pets.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah.
Rabbits are nice pets.
Come at them, rabbits, I guess.
No, they're nice pets. They can recognize you. Fuzzy they can come when they're called. They're actually quite intelligent.
Make a good stew when you're done with them.
Yeah. They also bite through lots of wires and stuff. And
So in this scene, did anyone notice Noel's shirt?
Oh my God, of course I did.
What can you tell us?
What does it say, Carlo?
I'm so perplexed by it. I'm just like, what does it mean? Where did you get it? It says Haggis Power.
Yes.
Love it.
Is that pulling on your heartstrings a little bit, Alan? Are you aren't you Scottish?
Yes, I do want that shirt. It's great.
Yeah. What about his short shorts that don't leave much to the imagination either?
I mean, that was the style at the time, right? That was like NBA. Yeah, yeah. Remember when before Michael Jordan came along and was like, why are we wearing our briefs on the basketball court, everybody? Yeah.
So, you're so short.
Yeah.
So Casey says that he should let them take care of the rabbit. And Noel, as I wrote, as in his incredible wisdom and forethought, says they don't know what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the rabbit doesn't know either.
Lisa has a sweater on with Snoopy playing baseball as well. I like that through all of these episodes, like I would imagine that in later editions of this show and other shows, you can't really have like copywritten imagery on your clothing. Oh, yeah. But on this, they're just like, who gives a fuck? Like, yeah. just wear
Who's going to watch this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever you showed up to set with. Like, yeah, you're in. Okay. Yeah. 3, 2, 1, and roll.
Yep.
Roll film.
Noel says, it's too much work. You've got to feed them. And that's kind of all he says. It's not really a lot of work.
It really isn't.
I mean, I know I was ragging on rabbits, but they are fairly easy pets to take care of, from my understanding, really.
Well, especially if you have them outdoors. Like, if you have the indoors, they chew on everything.
Yeah, they do.
Like, you have to make sure that there's nothing, like, below knee level kind of thing that they can possibly get their little teeth into. But, like, other than that, like, they can be litter trained. Like, they just have their little hutch. Like, they're actually really good pets.
So they said they can give him a good home. And I said, well, it's just the same one he is in now. It's not like it's a big difference, but they're going to feed him and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, one thing I've learned from watching TV is that anytime two friends like or siblings say that they're going to share something, it always ends well, doesn't it?
Also, I guess their definition of feeding the rabbit is they're picking leaves and throwing leaves on the rabbit. And I'm like, that's not feeding.
And later we'll see we just grab weeds from neighbors' yards.
Yeah. Like, I'm gonna feed the cats later. I'm just gonna dump cat food on them when they're in their bed. Like, dinner served, biatch. Yeah.
It's like when Napoleon Dynamite has to go feed the donkey. And he takes out like an egg casserole or something and just starts throwing a casserole at the donkey.
Yeah. That's what these kids did.
So we skip to a little bit time later. I don't know. There's a few time skips in here. We don't really know how long it is, but Casey and Lisa are making a pact to take care of the rabbit, to cherish and nourish and take care of this rabbit as long as we both shall live. So help me, they say. Then I wrote that everyone in the Degrassi universe knows that if there's no blood involved, it's not a true pact. So
no,
not sure you can really stick to it.
Very true.
So as usual, right at the beginning, everything is, you know, all well, hunky dory. They're going to feed and water and clean the rabbit's cage. And then, as Alan had hinted at already, I said, the scene ends with them just throwing dandelions on the rabbit.
Yes.
So
I think it's clover.
Sure.
Yeah. Clover flowers.
Perfect. Yummy.
Rabbits love clover.
Must give credit to this rabbit as we go on. Like, he gets manhandled a little bit and handles it pretty well.
Oh, I know, right?
I was wondering if the rabbit was sedated.
Yeah, there's many rabbits that were used in this episode, and well, we lost another one.
Yeah, this is the calmest rabbit of all time, because yeah, in real life, no rabbit's letting you fucking just like toss them around like these kids did. Also, according to the Degrassipedia page, Degrassipedia, I don't know.
Yes, nailed it. That one fits.
I don't know how to put it. Yeah, Degrassipedia, you know, yeah. They list that there is a continuity issue because Noel's rabbit in Noel Buys a Suit is completely white, while this one is gray and white, to which I thought, rabbits die a lot, like, and you replace them, so
sure, yeah.
It's very plausible that he just got another rabbit. It's fine.
And you know what pets die a lot are hamsters.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you hold them the wrong way, you can scare them to death. Like, that is a quick pet to teach the kid about the circle of life.
Yeah.
Also, did somebody write that on the internet?
Yes. Sorry. Yes, they did.
The internet's great.
They were watching. They were
really
watching,
important thing.
They were watching this show and they were like, wait a second. And then they played the old episode just to be sure. And they're like, fuck. And they ran to their computer, logged onto the Degrassipedia and made that edit. And then they were like, my work here.
Got you.
Yeah. Thank you, Degrassi Universe. So there you go.
Well, according to PetMD, pet Ooh. Rabbits can live anywhere from 7 to 10 years. So slightly more longevity than hamsters, which I think are like 2 years, right? And the oldest rabbit ever recorded was 18 years old.
Wow.
Oh, and this rabbit will live till the end of this episode.
Well, not even the end of the episode.
Not even the end.
Yeah. Too much credit.
Yeah.
Death waits for no one. Rabbit.
Now we move to what's probably one of the best scenes in this episode. There's four kids, Casey and Lisa, and we get introduced to two new kids here, but they're walking in alleyways behind their house. I want to shout out to alleyways. They're pretty cool always. They're going off to a local swimming pool, and they're two friends, Norman and Dottie.
Mm-hmm.
Who I think they kind of want to push this Dottie's a little bit like Cookie.
Is it Dottie? Does nobody ever says her name out loud, right?
No.
She's just credited that way?
Oh, I thought that was Cookie.
I wrote down Cookie until later.
No, no.
And I, was like, oh, I also thought it was Cookie. I don't know until I looked into it. Yeah, it's. I don't know if it's Dottie or Dottie.
Name
D-O-D-I.
Yeah, nameless child is what
I think
they are.
It's, she acts like a nameless child. I would say Dottie.
Probably Dottie. I know
because there's only one D, right?
That's
so
fair.
She's Dorinda, I believe.
Yeah.
Full name.
That's exactly what that's short for.
And did you do an update about a certain rabbit that didn't look like a previous rabbit and you wrote on the internet? Now it's coming up and now you're all awkward I'm calling you out, making fun.
Now I'm going to go to the site now. Hold on. I'm just going to put in Dottie, pronounced Dottie.
Mm.
Just write that down and then I'll put I'll put in like a sound clip so that people know how to say it properly. Yeah, we'll take care of it.
We'll take care of it, everybody. Don't fret.
So when they're walking in this alleyway to go swimming, and we have this a couple times they mentioned about going to swimming, which is pretty cool. Like, we never had a local swimming pool you could really go to in my neighborhood, even though Stratford had one. It was too far to walk, but I always thought this kind of stuff was kind of neat. I don't know if any of you guys have local swimming
pools. I remember
there
being like these community, at least like these community pools so much in Winnipeg, but here in Regina there's like outdoor community pools in several neighborhoods.
I
was always kind of jealous of kids that could just go to a pool like that.
In the summer, me and Sarah swim every weekend at a community pool.
Oh, nice.
We have
was
three
it
of them.
I guess it's like a big city thing, right? Like, Toronto is a big city where they have those kinds of things to help families that don't have the area on their own to go play, right? So
we have three pools that are within like a 10-minute drive of our place, none within like good walking distance, but two of them have slides, so that's the ones that I want.
Yeah, 100%. You're not visiting that third one too often.
No.
So they're talking about what they're going to name Rabbit. Lisa says Fluffy, and Casey says, that's dumb. I love it. Just love the straight up. And wants Bugs, like the cartoon. Norman says Gretzky, so shout out to 80s Ontario in the NHL for Wayne Gretzky.
82, yeah, 82. Gretzky is a thing.
Yeah, that's right. But it's what do we agree on? Dottie?
Yeah,
Dottie.
Dottie. So it's Dottie who settles it by saying, just leave it as Rabbit, because that's what he was already called. And Norman says, well, he'd get confused otherwise. So Rabbit it is, which was a hell of a name from the get-go.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what. They missed George the Animal Steel. That would have been my vote.
Uh-huh.
So my sixth grade class pet was a rabbit.
Ooh.
And the class got to vote on the name for the rabbit.
Oh, no.
Can you guess what the voted in name was for the rabbit?
What year was it?
Yes.
Sixth grade?
I like this game.
It's like 80, 90, 1990?
Somewhere around there.
MC Hammer. MC Hammer the Rabbit.
No, it's Thumper. It's not. It was Thumper.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So obvious. Uh-huh. So obvious.
MC
and
Hammer,
then at the end of the year, they did, like, for any of the kids whose parents said that they could enter, there was like a draw to like win the rabbit.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I ended up winning the rabbit. And
well, this is why you have this sauce bottle.
Yeah, he was a good little pet, except his name was fucking Thumper.
I mean, you could have just changed it. It's a fucking rabbit. Like, it's not coming to you when you call him.
There was was a girl in my class, and she had put in her name for the draw as well. And then after I won, she was so upset that she told me that she hoped that the rabbit died in my arms.
she's not the one that wanted to beat you up, or was that
seriously? Same girl who punched me in the face. Nice. Years later, punched me in the face started. For real. Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Now she's the premier of Alberta.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Good job, Danielle. You bitch. She does many very bad things. I'm allowed to say that.
Yep.
She's a bad person doing bad things.
As they're walking down the alley, Lisa peels off and they say, "Where are you going?" She says, "I just need to get some food," or says something like, "I just need to get something for Rabbit to eat because Noel always got it." So she just goes into a neighbor's backyard and meets the wrath of only who is credited as Grouchy Person, who is wielding
whose
a rolling pin.
His real name is Babs.
But oh, I
know. Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
Which is also Bugs Bunny's girlfriend's name.
Ah.
And she's wielding a rolling pin and yelling at her to get off her property.
Love it.
So classic.
Yeah, which yep. Part of me's like, "What's wrong with you, old lady?" And then part of me's like, "Well, no, this little brat just wandered into your backyard.
Stop stealing my weeds." I'd be like, "Look, lady, I'm going to call bylaw enforcement." Mm-hmm.
Then Norman calls her a grouch, and the kids mock her as they walk off to the pool. So where do you guys sit on the kids on this?
The kids are like,
"What side of the line are the kids on this?"
The kids are like, "Fuck you, you fat bitch." What a great show.
I mean, it's realistic. You
oh,
know?
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what kids would do after they got yelled at by some old grouch, right? Like,
"Go back inside or I will come back at night and burn down you, the house with you and your 19 cats inside."
You old bag.
Whoa, kid, relax. Crazy Toronto kids.
Things sort of escalated there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, before we moved out to the farm, so we lived in Stratford, and we had this, we had a bungalow-style house. And we had a nice big backyard where lots of people would, like, the kids would often come over and play because we had kind of one of the bigger backyards. So we had this big window in our kitchen so you could see into the backyard. So, like, we could play outside. My mom could watch, dad, whatever, like, that kind of a nice big window. And in our backyard, on to the right of the window, if you're looking out, we also had, like, a row of apple and pear trees for some reason. But you couldn't see the whole tree. So one day when this is going to have a point. So let me go. This will have a point. So one day when I can remember distinctly being in the kitchen and seeing the leaves of our pear tree shaking. So I was like, "Oh man," I was young. I was like 8 years old, 9 years old. And so I was like, "I wonder what's in the tree." So I look out the window and there is an old lady up in our tree. No, not a word of a lie. Old lady up in our tree. So my brother and I, we weren't home alone, but my mom worked shift work because she was a nurse. So she was sleeping in the basement. It's one of those things where you really have to be careful when you wake up a shift worker from sleep.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because one, they're not getting back to sleep, and two, they're going to be angry at you. So we thought this is probably a pretty good time because we were kind of scared. 7 and 8, 8 or 9, my brother and I were. So we go down, we get my mom, she comes up. She's kind of, she's rattled. She doesn't know why someone's in her backyard. So long story short, this part. There was this old lady that lived down the street or had just moved in with her son down the street, and she had early onset dementia or like Alzheimer's or something, and she was confused. And I guess she grew up with trees like this, like apple trees and pear trees. So she had got out of the house and wandered down the street and saw we had these trees. So she was incredibly harmless, and we learned her name was – I don't remember what her real name was, but she went by Winky was her name, Winky.
Now you're just making this whole story up.
I wish I could. I am not making this up. So from time to time, Winky would end up coming down the street and she would end up in our trees again or picking apples or something, to the point where every time we saw her, and again, we were young, but old enough now we knew she was harmless, where we'd say, "Hi, Winky." And she'd say, "Hi." We're like, "How's the crop?" She's like, "Just about ripe for picking." And then we'd have to call the neighbor, the house view down, and say, "Your mom's in the tree again." And he'd come down and get his mom and take her back.
I feel like I missed out on life growing up in the city.
Mm-hmm, probably.
So we jump back into the episode. We're having a sleepover at Lisa's. And in pure 1980s fashion, Lisa has a bunk bed. I was jealous of bunk beds as a kid. I never had one. I always thought they were cool.
I had one.
And water beds.
I got both beds.
no shortage of like product placement here either. They have.
Oh, you wait for it.
Yeah, there's. But Lisa has Popeye pajamas. Lisa has a Kermit the Frog doll, and I think an ET figure.
Yeah,
it's fucking great.
So they're having a little fight with their stuffed animals or their puppets over stolen carrots, and then Noel, who I'm going to say was not Noel yelling.
I think it was Noel.
It didn't sound like him. You think that? I didn't think it sounded like him.
Yeah, because Noel says, the actual actor, you mean? Because
Yeah. It's supposed to be Noel, but I thought it sounded like, what was the name of Ida's brother?
Oh, yeah.
Fred.
It sounded like him to me, but whatever.
Yeah. It actually really, I noted that too. It really doesn't sound like, what's his face? Noel. Yeah.
Well, maybe his voice is changing, guys.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He's getting older.
Maybe.
He tells him to shut up. Himself now.
Go to sleep because Dad and Gail will be home soon.
Son of a plumber.
I also love that because, you know, Gail got married to their dad, that it's Dad and Gail. Love it.
Yeah. So here we go with kind of like the fatal words that are uttered in these type of schedules, where Casey suggests that they make a schedule to take care of the rabbit so they won't forget and it'll make it better. Lisa turns off the lights, gets back into bed, and Casey sneaks her stuffed animal up into the dark to scare her as Noel threatens he's going to tell them again. So they have this schedule that they're going to agree that each one of them is going to share the rabbit jobs and care evenly, which...
Sure.
Or doomed words.
Yeah, we'll see.
So we're going to get these, you know, once in a while flips back to, I guess, present time in the episode. So now we're going to get Lisa's telling of the story, where she titled it "The Worst Summer of My Life." Author Lisa Kennard.
Oh, also, they're only subscribed this project because the teacher is very hungover. She's like, "Listen, kids, write about your summer, I guess, like." It's really open-ended. You can do whatever the hell you like. Teacher's going to put her head down on the desk.
You have all class.
Uh-huh. You go. All day.
She like, was down at the feast, the Taste of Danforth, the weekend.
Yeah, she was.
And she's had some drinky poos.
Too so, much blocky last night.
Just go right ahead.
Like, I love how this is a lesson to teach the kids about how to write in past tense. So the teacher at the start is like, remember when you're writing about the past, write in past tense. Now, everybody, write a story about the past, and that's how you'll learn. Like, there's nothing else to the lesson. It'd be like, let's learn about multiplication, everybody. Take out your pens and papers, do some multiplication. I'll just sit here. That's the lesson.
I'll just lie here for a while.
Yeah.
Mama needs a dart. I'll be back.
Mrs. Gonzalez was out having... chicken sandwiches with Mr. Radich.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
A young Dan Radich.
Young Dan Radich. Who are you, you lovely gentleman? All right, so we move back to in the past again, and sometime as past in the summer, and Lisa's starting to narrate that Casey's dad is started to act funny. So we get a cut to a pretty cool scene where the four kids again are just hanging out, and they're playing what I think's Risk.
Oh, yeah. They are 100% playing Risk. Yeah.
Yeah. And Risk is a game about invading and what's going to happen in this scene.
Risk is a pretty advanced game for children this age, I think.
Yes.
I mean, that's what you did in the 80s, though. You like picked up games that were way too advanced for you and tried to play them. Hey,
they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. The sense of it isn't difficult, but like it can be difficult if you have really good people playing. Casey's dad, who I wrote as is tall as fuck.
Uh-huh.
He's smoking a pipe, wearing a cardigan in the middle of summer, and he's just stepping off distances in the background.
Wearing a cardigan with shorts.
What a time. So the kids are sitting playing this game. They're sitting at a picnic table. Awesome. And they have a wide open big bottle of juice beside them. Maybe it's Gatorade. That time, I don't know, but it looked like juice. And cool, and all maybe? I could think about was, as an Ontarian in the summer, that juice would be covered in flies or bees buzzing around it. Like, that's the worst decision to leave that lid off that sugar.
Stupid kids.
Stupid kids is right.
Maybe it's aspartame-laden Kool-Aid.
Delicious.
True. Huh.
Apparently, bees won't go after artificial sweeteners. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard.
Also, if you want to know what Casey's dad looks like, he kind of reminded me of an outcast sidekick, Farnsworth Bentley, a taller version of him. Just put glasses on him. Same thing. So you got
also
it right
looked
there.
A little bit like. Do you guys remember Dennis from Polka Dot Door?
I do not.
I am unfamiliar yes, I do. With Polka Dot Door.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, really?
Canadian, very Canadian. He was all over Canadian TV, especially kids TV.
Yeah.
Oh, so you know Dennis, Ted?
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, he looked like Casey's dad. Yes. Yeah, he was all over the show. You never heard of Polka Dot Door, Arlo?
I've heard of it.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is Canadian gold.
See you soon. It's Polka Dot Door.
Yeah. Yeah. Songs and stories and so much more.
Casey's dad has got it
going on. Casey's dad, yeah. Now we're with it.
So we learn that, we don't learn. Mr. Rothfels is, we hear him commenting that it's very odd. Very odd indeed. So we then cut to him and Gail measuring the backyards. Now, I would imagine, like, as adults, we're watching this. We know 100% what's going on. But I don't think kids watching would have any idea what they're doing.
Well, and these kids can't notice it because Noel is busy mowing the lawn. And Lisa is working the outdoor grill all by herself.
The smallest grill.
It's a hibachi.
Yeah. So hibachi, baby.
Yeah. We had one just like that when I was a kid. And that's all we had. Like, we didn't have a hibachi in addition to, like, a big gas grill. All we had was this little hibachi.
Something tells
when
me
we
they
were
don't have
grilling
anything.
Outside, it was on that fucking thing. And we would roast marshmallows over it, too.
Red hot coals falling out the rusty bottom.
Right into the grass that Noel's cover probably super dry because it's the summer.
Also, they got rocket pops. They were like candy.
We haven't
that
got
were...
there yet.
Astro Pops.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't got there yet, though. We're getting there.
Ooh. No, we're getting there.
Okay.
Well, presumably it's very Lisa's important. Turn to make dinner for the family because this family doesn't make, the adults don't make food.
No.
So,
they do not.
So Noel and Lisa have like an adult small talk conversation. Noel asks what's going on. Lisa says they're measuring something. And then we heard Gail say that it doesn't really matter to her, but Mr. Rothfels just wants to be thorough.
Yeah, Mr. Rothschild's kind of a jerk.
He does come off as a bit of a jerk, yeah.
Oh.
So then, as Noel and Lisa are still talking about how Rabbit's doing, Gail comes over and talks to them about property tax assessments.
She's like, hey, kids. So I got my tax assessment and the property line that divides. And if I was that kid's age, I'd be like, I don't know any of these words. Like, what? What the fuck are you talking
monkey's
about?
Monkey's playing in your head right now. Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, she talks to him about surveying land and tax assessments. Great.
This long story tells us that what they've learned is that the Rothfels property actually extends 2 feet further into the Kennards property. And, of course, it's cutting right through the back shed and Rabbit's pen that they've made. And the thing was stuck on. Lisa's going to burn those burgers because she is not paying attention to them. And the fire is roaring.
It's the flames. That old extra fat. Fatty old ground beef.
That's got
that's
1980s that's probably some 70,
full 30. Fat ground beef. Yeah.
That's right. Badass cow.
Let's be honest, it's probably better ground beef than you buy now anyway.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
So we learn through narration. There's quite a bit, as we mentioned earlier, quite a bit of narration in this episode, which sometimes people would argue is because an episode's weak and you need narration to explain it, but neither here nor there. We learned that the city has come out and remeasured the property and placed stakes along the new property line. And then here we go, where we get the eating of the Arlo.
Astro Pops.
Oh, there you go. Not Rocket Pops.
Yeah. I remember those. They were pretty good.
Rocket Pops are the ice cream, or the popsicle ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are Rocket Pops, which I learned through my husband that they were called something bombs in the States.
Of course they were.
Yeah,
machine gun.
Here, at least in Winnipeg when I was growing up, they were Rocket Pops. And then Astro Pops were those little cone-shaped lollies. And I couldn't remember what they were called. I was just like, oh my god, I remember those. And then I Googled tricolor 80s lolly cone. and it came up with Astropop.
Perfect.
And I was like, okay.
And people would suck on it until it gets a sharp point that you could drive through somebody's eye.
Oh my god, you could get it so sharp.
Yeah.
They were so much prettier than how they actually tasted, I think.
Oh yeah, they really didn't taste like anything if I remember, right?
The original flavors were something like pineapple, passion fruit, and like something else.
In 1980s Canada, there was pineapple and passion fruit flavors?
Apparently, but the candy changed company hands several times. Like the company that owned it kept on selling it or whatnot. And apparently you can still get them. Hmm. They're made by a company called Leaf, as in the leaf of a tree. Yeah. And it seems like they sort of make them for the retro candy circuit. Oh. That's you're not going to find them in 7-Eleven or whatever, but if you go to a specialty sort of retro candy store, you might find them. The original manufacturing equipment for them was destroyed, so they had to buy the rights and rebuild the.
Wow.
How to make it from scratch, and it's like the wrapper for it is the mold for it. They make the wrapper into a cone. And then directly put the molten sugar into there, and that's how it's formed into that shape.
And when you get to the bottom, white candle wax.
Yep.
Just delish. Pure wax. Yum yum. Can I eat that, mummy? Sure, go ahead.
You know, it's a candy that I haven't thought about in a really long time. But seeing them all have it in this scene, I was just like, oh my god, I remember those. Absolutely.
So Lisa and Casey are getting into a bit of an argument over the shed being ripped down and then subsequently who owns Rabbit. And so kind of wrote, Casey goes into bitch mode saying, the shed is ours. We can do whatever we want with it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Like she all of a sudden is such a bitch. Yeah.
That's like an instigating moment right there.
She turns heel. Like, big time.
Yeah.
Heel move. Heel turn.
It's like a slap. It's like the slap from the good guy or the bad guy to the good guy. It's when Andre the Giant ripped Hogan's shirt and
cross off. Yes,
made him.
I would have been okay with Caitlyn giving her the super kick through the shed window. Wrestling. So
we quickly learn that Norman is choosing Lisa's side. They tell her they need to leave because they have things to do. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, 8-year-olds. So we jump to the alleyway, and Norman really sides with Lisa and says Casey always gets her way. Lisa says she doesn't want to be friends with Casey because now she thinks she's the big boss. Norman says, good for you, Lisa.
Yeah, and Norman's really kind of an instigator. Right?
Yeah, he really does his stick in the finger, right? He's prodding everything.
Yeah, you know what you should do? Fuck her over.
Yeah. You know what? Shiver.
Next time with your candy.
Yeah.
You're so sharp.
Yeah.
These razor sharp candies. As I wrote here, I note they're just wandering away to who knows where, who knows. And of course, they didn't tell their parents. They just left. Which is amazing.
Let's say Norman's house they're going to.
Sure.
So we skip back. Some time has passed again. We're in Lisa's bedroom, and Casey has come to see Lisa. The mom call. I think it's Gail that calls up. I can't remember. I forgot to write down. Says, Lisa's here. She says, I don't want to see her.
I think it was Noel that called up.
It could have been Noel. Yeah, I just forgot to write it down. Casey seems sad that they're not friends and that they should forget about the stupid steak. Casey also mentions that Lisa has been forgetting to feed Rabbit, but Lisa says only a couple times. And then all of a sudden, Lisa just says, that puppet's my property, when Casey is holding a puppet.
Love it.
Casey leaves, and Lisa then just throws her rabbit puppet right beside a pretty sweet E.T. puppet.
Nice.
So we're starting to get a little bigger fracture in the friendship right now.
Well, Casey, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah.
It's true.
You're out there, and you're just like, whoa, the shed's my property. And then you're all just like, why can't we be friends?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you're not feeding the rabbit.
Yeah.
And so we jumped to the backyard, and as I started my sentence here, and here we go. Lisa is legit drawing a line with rope to mark off her property so they know where each one stands. Lisa says everything on her side is hers, even Rabbit's food tray. And Rabbit is now a statistic in the long line of divorced parents.
Oh, poor Rabbit.
And this is
this is what we are witnessing.
This is a trope for all television shows, right? I'm going to literally draw a line down the middle of said, you know, the property, two kids sharing a bedroom, you know, whatever.
That's a Full House one. I remember that.
Yeah.
So we get some narration back in school and Casey saying it wasn't her fault the stupid Stiddy put up the stakes, which, I mean, is true.
It's not your fault. Yeah, you chose to be a bitch about it. So
bitch about it.
Yeah.
But also, Lisa, it's your dad's fault for being like a fucking stickler for a couple feet of property line.
Right, especially if you're not doing anything with that property ever anyway.
Oh, what are you gonna like? Fuck, come on, man.
It's different.
I get it if you're trying to like sell the house at this exact moment, but like as it is right now, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
So the narration continues to Casey saying, but Lisa was angry and she was scared Lisa would take Rabbit. Well, maybe she had some forethought. So again, back to the backyard, back in time again, Casey gets the idea that she should put up a wooden barrier between the sides of their pen and move Rabbit to her side. And I said, here's where we start with the nonstop manhandling of this rabbit.
Like, I mean, we all know what's actually going to happen to the rabbit. It would be great if this story ended with like both of them holding onto Rabbit and pulling on it, just ripping it too. Yeah.
Cut the rabbit in two. Okay.
Yeah.
So we get this kind of same thing happening back and forth a little bit in this episode starting now. We get to see Lisa now sneaking into the backyard. She's probably going to do something the same and then gets angry because Casey beat her to it. Casey says the rabbit wants to be on her side, but Lisa said you forced him on that side. And then we get, I actually laughed at this. All of a sudden you get Casey going like, me? Weird vocal. Like, how dare you?
Throw down.
And then we get Norman jumping in. And then Casey's pretty quick to shut him up and says Rabbit's better off with her because she doesn't forget to feed him. Lisa says, I can't believe I'm laughing as I'm saying this. Lisa says, the rate Casey wants to feed her, he'll blow up.
Yes.
Body shaming a rabbit.
Yeah. God. He's like, that rabbit's going to be a fat fuck if you keep feeding it that way. So, yeah.
It's like two parents, right? You're not taking care of the kid. You're letting the kid eat whatever they want. It's like divorced parents. It's amazing. Maybe it's a parable.
Yeah, no, they're teaching kids what a bad divorce looks like. So.
Yeah.
Rabbit gets anorexia. That's not funny. That's bad.
Oh, Jesus.
Rabbit grows up and has as a child out of wedlock as a teenage girl.
Yeah.
His parents were so mean, didn't set her up properly. So Dottie from out of nowhere says she can hear them from halfway down the block. They start explaining their cases, and I wrote blabber on about stuff about rights and nonsense. And then I do note that Lisa does some pretty good, like, angry faces in this episode. Like, she can stare down somebody.
It's
good
like
old,
she's
Kate and Ryan.
Yeah, like, you're seeing foreshadowing of you fucked Tessa Campanelli in her face.
That's
like,
whoa. Right, they are.
The child version.
And at this point, when Lisa's sort of staring, I mentioned also that Dottie is legit looking off camera and probably at her mom because she is not looking in the direction of the scene at all.
Wonderful.
She is a pretty bad actor at this point, but young, but would just like sticks out with her, even when she.
I legitimately believe this was Cookie throughout this entire episode until I read through the notes later, you know, on the Degrassipedia.
Yes,
and realize that Cookie is not in this episode, and in terms of age, it makes sense, honestly.
Sure, yeah, but it does look like her until you sort of like really look at her.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we hear Casey getting called in, and she turns and low-key threatens Lisa to keep her grubby mitts off Rabbit. And then Casey leaves to military music, as her dad says, "It sounds like a war in here." You created that war there, pipe smoker. Dottie says that she's going to the pool and if they want to join her, and she walks off. And as again, I mentioned, it looks like she's counting left or saying left foot, right foot as she's walking. And then Lisa proceeds to grab Rabbit and run away with it.
Well, Lisa seems like she's into going to the pool. And then Norman's like, no.
Get the rabbit.
We're going to get the fucking rabbit.
Operation Steal the Rabbit.
Fucking Norman comes in here, causes a bunch of trouble, and then fucks right off, and we never see him again.
Yep.
Huh.
And then the scene all of a sudden jumps to the front of the house, and we get this military music and someone stomping to the front of the house where you think maybe it's Casey coming to the front of the house, but no, it's Dottie. And I want to say, was she ever at the pool, or how long have they been on the front steps here? Because all of a sudden Dottie's back. She wonders why they stole Rabbit. And Norman says, we didn't steal him. He's just visiting.
Yes.
Oh my God. Dottie thinks they should put him back. Norman's picked his side. Dottie seems to try to be like the mediator or peacekeeper. She says she could talk to Casey, but she's really mad. So we get a continued fracture between the two of them. Neither side wants to agree or see each other's side. Dottie goes back and tells Casey they'll bring Rabbit back if she'll take down the board. And of course, Casey says, fuck that noise. Rabbit back first, and then we'll talk about the board. And then we have a good old-fashioned standoff, ladies and gentlemen.
How exciting.
Yeah. Lisa returns the rabbit to her side. We learn that only because Gail won't let the rabbit in the house because it made a mess. And neither will Norman's mom. And shockingly, I wrote down, even though Arlo won't agree, I said, oh, I wonder why, because it's a fucking rabbit.
Oh, boy. Shots fired again.
I mean, it's possible that the rabbit, like, chewed on everything. And even, like, rabbit poop isn't, like, that big of a mess. Like,
not really, no.
They're just like little raisins.
Yeah.
Me, yeah, honestly, if you have a dog, it'll probably eat them. When we go into the field with Tanuki, he makes a game of eating all the little rabbit poops, which we try to make him not do. But delicious. He loves it. So. Hey,
save some for me. Yum, yum. Yeah. They're like raisins.
Yeah.
A little mouthful of rabbit poop.
He loves it.
I love it. She says. I mean, he loves it.
Best dog in Regina.
Yeah, okay. It's got that crown, so it doesn't have that crown. Very proudly. All right, whose side are we on so far now? Who's on whose side here?
Casey's a fucking bitch. Like, sorry.
I mean, Casey started it.
Yeah. I mean, Norman's the asshole of the whole thing. He's just like...
He's making it first.
Yeah,
he loves sees it. A way to sidle in and be the new friend.
Yeah, he gets off on all the people fighting. So, it's great.
So we get a quick cut to the classroom. We'll see this a few times too, where we get some side eyes between the two of them. Obviously, they kind of know each other's probably writing the same thing. Then we jump back to the backyard where Casey is pissed that Lisa returned the rabbit, but to the wrong side. Dottie says, just move the damn board and there won't be sides. But Casey says, that's an insult to her family's honor or some dumb shit I wrote. Like, she's going on about how that's an insult to me or something like that if I have to give in a little bit. So Casey grabs a rabbit, but this time she puts a board over top of the rabbit's pen, giving Lisa's no chance to. And they wrote, oh, wait, Lisa just comes right outside, lifts up the board and moves rabbit.
That's right.
And then destroys the hell out of Casey's side of the pen. So this is the next level. We're starting to ramp up this fight, right? Each one's taking another obstacle. I'm going to put a roof. Well, I'm going to tear down your side. It's starting to get ugly, folks.
Not a parent in sight, by the way, throughout this whole fucking thing, right? Like, you would imagine that both of those kids were like, to their parents, like, oh, Casey's being such a shithead. Oh, Lisa's such a hoe. Like, parents don't care. They're like, children, sort this out. Like, we don't give a fuck.
Well, they'd probably sit the two kids down or something with the parents and like, let's figure this out right now.
Yeah.
Right, but no, not in Degrassi. Kids got to figure this stuff out yourself, and
yeah,
and how do they do that?
Even when there's a living being who's in danger.
Well, you know what? Casey says this is the last straw. Time to teach Lisa a lesson. So she grabs a cage from the shed, yanks the rabbit, chucks him in the cage, and then throws the cage in a dark shed, locking it behind it.
Lovely,
nailed that lesson right there. So we jump again to the classroom. We're getting more side eyes with each other as they're both living through the trauma of this memory. And then we cut back to the backyard, and then we get some sort of sad, soft music for some reason. Lisa comes out and is going to feed the rabbit some of those stolen weeds. So she's obviously made another trek to grouchy person's backyard, risked her life. And as she does that, shit's really going to start to hit the fan now as Casey gives away Rabbit's whereabouts, saying it's safe in the shed. Lisa says, that's not safe. That's stealing. Two things aren't related, but could be stolen and still safe. But
I mean,
also, that's not safe. Rabbits need oxygen and sunlight. And
I'll give you the sunlight. That shed doesn't look like it's the most airtight shed. I think there's a lot of holes in that shed.
I mean, it's safer in there than where it's going to be later.
Yeah, apparently it's safer than the alleyway.
Yeah, it's a dog-proof shed, I'm assuming.
So they start to argue about trusting each other, breaking their pact, visitation rights, before Lisa just storms off. But not long later, she comes back with her reinforcements. Who would that reinforcement be, everybody? That's one Norman.
Good old stirring the pot, Norman.
Well, and so they're about to spray her with the hose, but you know Norman was talking to Lisa, and he's like, you know what you should do?
He's like whispering her.
Yeah, he's like the devil. You should spray her with the hose. Fuck her up, Lisa. Do it. I'll watch. Yeah.
I'll stand over here at a safe distance.
Do it. So as Casey brings out the rabbit to feed him, Lisa sneaks up and drenches Casey. Loved it. Just brings the hose out and just starts firing this hose at her, which is causing Casey to rush into the shed. And then Norman locks her in the shed.
That's amazing.
To which I wrote flat out incredible. Ingenious. Lisa says they're going to keep her in there forever. Until she learns a lesson.
Yeah.
But we learn that Casey is the Harry Houdini of Degrassi Street, and she manages to trip the lock, bust out, gives Lisa some of her own medicine, and starts drenching her.
And the rabbit. Drenching the rabbit.
Yeah. And I'm assuming rabbits don't like water. I don't really know, but I can't imagine they like to get hit with water like that. A massive water fight breaks out, as does we get some interesting insults. Lisa says Casey is crazy like her dad. Casey says, shut up. My dad's got a PhD, unlike your dad, who's stupid. Lisa's like, check your bank balance. My dad makes more money. And I'm not sure that's true as we go further on this show, but for whatever reason, Noel makes more money.
I'd also like to say that in my experience, there is actually a high correlation between having a PhD and being crazy. So,
yep.
Do you remember, Arlo, when we worked in call centers and somebody would apply and they'd be like, I have a PhD, and we'd be like, this will not work. Like, we're just telling you right now, don't do this.
Yeah. Yes.
You crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, the job won't work, or the fact that you knew it wouldn't work because they're bringing up the fact they have a PhD?
Whole thing. Just nope. Gotcha. Go away.
Yeah. The fact that they have a PhD and they're applying at a call center.
Yeah.
I think it's like there's some social problems there, if that's the thing. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Lisa says she's going to finish it. And Casey says, over my dead body. Like, whoa, this is getting intense.
Over Rabbit's dead body.
Yeah, we'll see that in a second. That will finish it. So once Dottie works her skills to calm everything down, we learn that in all the kerfuffle, Rabbit has managed to dig a quick hole and leave her hostile family behind. You see the episode, or you see the scene, the rabbit is like moving around. Like, all of a sudden they were able to agitate this rabbit. Maybe it came off its downers. I don't know. It's really starting to move around.
They actually off camera had a legitimate like dog to scare it, chase it.
Like dog barks. They were getting the dog riled up.
Yeah.
So now the search of Rabbit seems to have sort of, you know, brought back a little bit of their friendship, as they kind of agree they need to go find him. So
I love how all the kids are like, Rabbit, Rabbit, and like, rabbits do have recall. I have a feeling that this rabbit does not have that kind of recall.
Oh, here I am. So here we go. The kids run off calling for Rabbit, and we get cuts between them and Rabbits. Rabbit seems to be loving his life. Like, he's bouncing around and... But unfortunately, we also hear dogs barking.
Yes.
Then we see a cut to a Dalmatian, which I like. Well, there's a Dalmatian in our neighborhood, which I think is kind of unfair because they need so much running around, but it's a beautiful dog.
And they're dumb as shit.
Its name is Bo.
Bo.
Oh yeah.
Bo.
I love that they credit the dogs.
I know.
Knowing what the dog's name was.
Well, they had the Bo was a murderer. Like, you gotta give him a credit.
He had a speaking line. He was barking.
Yeah, we saw. Well, we saw the Dalmatian at the start of the episode briefly, and then when you hear the dogs barking, you actually also see two stray dogs walking down the alley towards the kids.
They do.
So you're like, oh, geez, and, which dog will it be? So
yeah, and then we get some ominous music, some growling, and I think if you listen closely enough, you might hear like a sound. I could be wrong, but I listened a couple times. I think there's a little chomping sound made.
They're like, can we get some rabbit whimpering sounds to add in there? No?
Have All you right. ever heard a rabbit scream?
Yes, I've heard them in our neighborhood. It is wild.
It is wild. You would never think they would make that kind of noise.
Yeah. It's actually kind of scary the first time you hear it.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
I'd say more than the first time. But anyways, that's just
speaking for me. If you know what it is, at least you're like,
what's that rabbit screaming?
It is, yeah. It's a painful sounding scream. So on that bright note. Some time has passed and Casey enters the backyard to find Lisa sitting on her side of the pen. She tells Casey that her dad found rabbit. Some dogs must have gotten to her. You know, I said this is pretty harsh too, because like the only other time we really deal with pets in Degrassi is like the dog Arthur found like pissing everywhere. Like for little kids to actually really point out like the rabbit was killed. Like, you know, it's pretty up. Like it's pretty intense.
Well,
and, you know, I think Stacey Musician does a pretty good crying scene here too.
Well, also though, like Lisa's parents nowhere to be found. It's just like they may not even know that her rabbit has been murdered, right? But parents, nothing. It's just let the kids sort it out. Like you have kids that are young, Tim. If they had a rabbit who got murdered by a dog, you wouldn't just be like, I don't know, sit outside and figure it out. Like,
yeah, fair enough. You do got to remember, I came from a farming family, so
I was going to say it's right different for farm kids.
Yeah,
yeah.
Way different.
I may have saw some stuff, but I do think I would shelter my kids quite a bit more than just letting Lisa sit there.
Yeah, like one of my ex-boyfriends, who's also named Tim, who Alan knows as well, and he was a farm kid, and he came home from school one day, and his mom was like, don't look out the living room window. And he eventually looked out the living room window, and there was still like fur in the air, you know, and like it's like that was the end of his rabbit.
Oh dear,
gosh.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff, but yeah, like he would definitely be trying to at least help them through it.
I mean, I had a friend who was on a farm who, and again, I'm sure when I tell this story, Tim, you'll just be like, "Yep, like that's normal." But they had cows on the farm, and like one of them birthed like, you know, a dead calf, and so and it was the winter and it froze and they just had this frozen dead calf at the door for like the whole winter. Yeah
You just left it out because it was sometimes if it was too much snow and you couldn't drag it back to maybe where you'd put it, which is what we would do, throw it in this spot, sort of in this bush. You just have to leave it there till you could.
The
same ex-boyfriend. same farm. His dad was showing his little nieces these baby bunnies that had been, again, dead rabbits, but these little baby bunnies that had been born, and he was holding one out to show them, and one of the farm cats leapt into the air and stole this tiny rabbit out of his hands and ran. And all of the adults who were standing around were just horrified. Like, they were just like, oh my god, like we traumatized these children and all this stuff. And his like one little niece, it's like there was like a beat, and then she was like, Katie got his lunch.
Yes.
Yum yum.
One of our cats used to bite the heads off of the kittens in our barn.
Okay.
So we used to walk in and be like, oh, well, I guess that one's gone.
Okay. Oh, I can't take it.
On the next edition of the Animal Murder Podcast, everybody.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Too much.
If you want to tell us about how you've seen animals die, write us. animalsandbrewheads@gmail.com.
Those two stories.
No, please. I hate it.
Yeah.
Casey asked if she saw him. Lisa said no because they put him in a garbage bag. They said, and I said they had a good old fashioned cry, and they agreed they need to bury him, but there also seemed to be burying there
their dislike for each other right now. So it's apropos too.
Yeah, kids, if you can't solve your problems, something animals. You love will die. So that's we'll the lesson. Though I still think the lesson for this episode is if you don't write in past tense about a story from the past, people will be confused because that's what they're trying to teach in school.
Did it ever happen?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll confuse the reader. That's what they told us in school, and that's what this whole fucking paper is about. So, yeah.
They cut back to the classroom, and the teacher's puking in the garbage can. Yeah,
shaking in the corner after reading it.
They're both like, writing in like
booze.
Writing in like great detail about the death of the rabbit. Even better would be like if these two kids like wrote these papers and
future tense.
And like and with tears in their eyes handed them in, and then the teacher reads them and is like, yeah, this isn't in the past tense. F.
Yeah, by the way, I'm sorry, girls. You have to rewrite this. It's not in the past tense. So the episode cuts to them burying Rabbit. They agree that they had not been, that they had been terrible friends. Oh, sorry. They agree that had they not been terrible friends and pet owners, he probably would be alive. You think?
I mean, maybe.
Okay.
So... Well, I don't think they would have scared him out of his pen. But eventually the dog might have got him. Who knows? The
rabbit knew what he was doing.
So death kids are dumb. Dog. They have buried the rabbit directly on the property line.
Good. Well, they both share it.
Isn't that he's putting a fucking new stake
for
in
now,
and they got to lay
any
some
of these,
concrete?
If these people move away and somebody wants to put up a fence,
what the fuck is that smell?
Digging directly through Rabbit's grave.
What? Well, and also through the lovely flowers they're planting on.
Awesome.
That stinks. What the hell?
What's in this bag? Oh, no.
Oh, God, Lord.
So, I mean, theoretically, Casey's dad does not want to build a fence. We actually don't know if he does or not. So this could be soon that this fence happens. Or if either one of them moves away in a few episodes, for example, the new owners could decide to erect a fence on the property line.
So many pieces.
I'm going to vomit.
Oh, it looks like vomit. Oh. So we move back to the present time. Miss Gonzalez is instructing them to leave their papers on her desk on their way out. We get to the end of the episode where it's finishing with the girls walking home. They're both talking about how they wrote about the same story, that they didn't want to hand in their stories. I guess, whatever.
Shame. They feel shame.
Yeah.
But they're heading to Lisa's house for popcorn, and they run home. Over the credits, Alan, just like you like in every episode, they run home giggling as young kids like to do. So yeah. We've learned they've got past it. They're still friends. Circle of life.
Dead rabbit brought them back together. The power of property lines cannot overcome the power of dead pets.
One is stronger than the other.
Yeah. So.
And we get credits. So what did everybody think of episode 7, Casey Draws the Line?
Rabbit was a good rabbit. Sorry, he's gone.
I mean, he'd be dead anyways. This episode was filmed 42 years ago.
Everyone's dead from this show.
Yeah.
I know I'd like to see how that old lady was going to swing that rolling pin. I'd be interested with that.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of her.
She's got moxie.
Yeah, but this is her only appearance, unfortunately. We hardly knew ye. Rolling pin lady. I thought that eventually all the shit with the rabbit going back and forth, it was like, all right, we get it. But when they got to the hoses, the locking the child in the shed, the rabbit murder, I was like, all right, business is picked up.
I'm back in.
Yeah. It's like,
you hooked me.
It's like a good wrestling match. Like sometimes in a 25 minute wrestling match, the first 20 minutes aren't actually much of anything, but then
you're building story. Yeah. It's narrative.
And then the last 5 minutes you're like, fuck, that was a good match. So
good payoff.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I think maybe one of the reasons why it's a little bit lower rated is there's not a lot of comic relief, you know? So it's hard to sort of feel warm and fuzzy about it.
It's just kids being shitty to each other?
Yeah, kind of.
As kids
and,
are, right?
And then it culminates in, like, a beloved pet dying, you know? So I can see why people maybe didn't, like, quote, enjoy it, unquote, as much as, say, like, I don't know, Noel buys a suit, right? Which is a little lighter and funner.
I would imagine that usually any time there's like sense of pets dying or animals dying and things, some people really don't like that. So that could be something that knocked it down, right?
There's like, an entire website that's called Does the Dog Die? So that you can check the movies that you watch in advance to make sure that the dog doesn't die. So I do understand that. But I one thing I really liked about this episode was the little 80s like Easter egg nuggets that we got. You know, the little Kermit the Frog doll and the little E.T. doll and the Astro Pops and that kind of thing. Like, that's one thing that I'm really enjoying about this show.
Well, and I think, like, the reason we see it, as we mentioned earlier, I think it was on, it wasn't off taping, was that, like, they didn't give a shit about what they put in the episode, right? Like, if the kids are eating Astro Pops, they're eating them. If we have some kid that's got an E.T. puppet, throw it in the corner. It makes it look more real.
Yeah, if you've got Snoopy on your shirt, then fine, right?
Yeah, so wear whatever you want.
Yeah, it just feels so real.
I always love the random numbered shirts.
Like there was one of those on Norm, and you're right.
Mm-hmm.
The mesh jersey.
Well, we will never see Norman again. We also will not see Dodie again. So we hardly knew ye.
They were like fucking Cookie went on strike and they brought in a scab and then they settled the deal with Cookie. So
like Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. When they brought in Tori for
Tori
half a season. Yeah.
She's got a leather jacket. Right, so... She's tough. But beautiful.
But Zach still wants to fuck her. So it's all good.
Of course he does.
Yeah. I don't think there was much stopping him from fucking anything, to be honest with you.
Yes, and then, but unlike other women who Zach screwed around with, she would appear for numerous episodes, not just a one-off.
That's true. That's true.
There was literally an episode where Zach got over his, like, fear of dating a girl who was in a wheelchair, and then he probably...
And one who was too tall. Wasn't there another one who was too tall?
Yeah, and then he finger-banged them, and then you never saw them, and then again, like, they're not another episode. Right. Yeah.
What a show. So real.
Yeah. One girl who was poor, remember that one at Christmas?
Oh, yeah. She was homeless or almost, wasn't she, around Christmas time?
Yeah, but she was still bangable, so Zach was like, fuck it. Hot. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what else is homeless? My dick.
Do you have a warm spot he can stay? Oh, man.
Oh my God.
Anyways.
I think a dog to run in and put this episode out of its misery.
Yeah.
So before we say our goodbyes, next week we're going to talk about episode 8, Pete Takes a Chance. So the rundown for that is Pete wants to make money. He sees an ad in the paper and is convinced it's the best and quickest way to go. He borrows money from Lisa and promises to pay her back. But in the process of selling and buying, he realizes he may not have enough. Pete has to decide what's more important, money or friendship. And we may get some big hints on our ongoing look as to why... Chuck's dad's in jail.
Uh-huh.
That being said, let's send it around the horn. Let's say our goodbyes. Vagina for vaginas. Say goodbye.
You can follow me on Instagram at ArLouisScott. Alan?
You can follow us, Narbos and Broomheads Podcast, on Instagram. Or send us an email again about animals you've seen die. narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com.
No, I don't want those stories. No.
Have you had a fight with a friend that resulted in an unfortunate passing of a beloved pet? Tell us about that as well. And I am Slip with Five Eyes or Slip. And also, I haven't asked this for a while, but, you know, if you want to give us a review, go for it. Hopefully it's 5 stars, but, you know, we talked a lot about dead animals on this episode. So if you slip us a 1-star review, I'll get it.
We'll take the negative reviews.
Yeah. Over to Ted.
Hey, I'm Ted at SayWa3. You can come see Linda on the Instagram machine. Sarah, I'll try and have something up.
Yes.
Soon. Yes.
I'm tired of I get woken up in the middle of the night. I'm trying to sleep. Someone nudges me. I'm like, what? What is it? She's like, can you tell Ted to put Linda on Instagram? I'm like, fuck. So please let me get some sleep. Post some pictures of the dog.
Mm-hmm. Will do. Woof, woof. Hello, Linda. That was it for me. That's all.
All right. And you can find me at FollyT on Instagram. So we will see you in a week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya. Woof, woof, baby.
Astro Pops.
Baby.
Well, I just said I don't get my love. I would never do my homework. I would stay up late and dream about squares out of my house.
Maybe it would.
I would walk around the cafe, cut! Just to get the car my dreams. Everyone thinks I'm so good. I've read lately, had to school. Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh